Let me encourage you tonight to take your Bibles out. Be turning to the second chapter of Genesis. In a moment, we'll begin by looking at a passage found in Genesis 2. I thank you so much for being here. I hope you've had a pleasant afternoon. It's been a wonderful afternoon for me and Beth. I'm glad that Jenny could be with us today, our daughter. She lives in Searcy, and she's over here today, and we'll hopefully make her way back some other time, another day this week, and we'll... But it's good that we can spend some time together with her. You know, Garrett's brother, Kenneth, worships with us at College View in Florence. And he led singing in our worship assembly last week, and there's a lot of similarities between Kenneth and Garrett. The main one is that they're both good song leaders. But they do a good job, and we're grateful to have Kenneth and Danielle with us. They went to worship with us when we were at university in Tampa, and then he got a job, fortunately, in Florence, Alabama. So when we moved, a few months after we moved, they moved, and we were very, very glad to have them. But again, thank you for being here tonight. I hope that you will, and have already made plans to be back with us Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night, and we will hopefully talk about things that will be of some value to you. I pray that they will, and I believe that they will. But thank you again for being here. I want to begin tonight in Genesis 2. And I want to look at, I want to read two passages. The first one, as I said, is found in Genesis 2. And then I'm going to read Hebrews, the fourth chapter. And then toward the close of the lesson, we'll refer back to the book of Hebrews, especially the fourth chapter. But in Genesis 2, beginning in verse 2, it's recorded, on the seventh day God ended His work which He had done, and He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it He rested from all His work which God had created and made. And then in Hebrews, the fourth chapter, beginning in verse 9, the Hebrew writer says this: "There remains therefore a rest for the people of God, for he who has entered his rest has himself also created from his works, or ceased from his works, as God did from his." The story of the Sabbath is a way for God to once again, and in a different way, explain himself and his purpose. It is both an interesting story to me, and it is an enlightening story, because, as I said, it helps us understand the relationship that we have with God. It begins, as I said, in Genesis 2, and even in chapter 2 and verse 1, when the passage tells us, "Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished." This is, of course, at the end of creation, and in chapter 2, verses 2 and 3, the passage tells us that on the seventh day, He ended His work. God rested. Have you ever thought about what it means for God to rest? Isaiah 40 tells us that what it doesn't mean is that God got tired. Now, it seems to me making everything and creating everything that was in the world would have been a difficult and a tiring thing to do. But not for God. That's not who God is. Isaiah 40 and verse 28 tells us that God does not grow tired or weary. And neither does it mean that God quit doing anything. John, the fifth chapter, verses 16 and 17 tell us, you remember that Jesus had healed a man on the Sabbath, and when He was basically attacked by the Jews for doing that, He responded by saying, "My Father has been working until now, and I have been working." In essence, if My Father can do it, I can do it. And Jesus said, "We're both working, and we are until now." So it's not a matter of, it seems to me, that He just quit doing anything. The point is that resting did not mean to stop working. And we're going to look at that concept tonight, and we're going to develop that and look at that a little bit more a little later on in our lesson. But I want you to think with me tonight, particularly, that God resting is not incidental at all to the creation story. But we sometimes, when we get to that, we sing the song, the kids' song about creation, and we get to the seventh day, and God rested, and it's almost like that's just to close what happened. And I think there's quite a bit more than that. As a matter of fact, what God did is He concluded His work on the seventh day, and when He rested for a particular purpose. I want you to think about the method of the creation for just a moment. Genesis 1 and verse 2 tells us that the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. Now, again, I don't know if you've ever just thought about that. But evidently it was just mud or something that was there, and yet it was without form and it was void. Well, those concepts are hard for us, I think. I'm not even sure how to view that or to think of that. But from the darkness came the light, and then atmosphere, and then water to separate the land from the land masses. And as you think about that, that is amazing. And then God goes to work on the earth's surface, and He makes it all pleasing, and He makes it perfect. And then after He had done all that, after He had created all that, then He makes man. And what becomes very clear, it seems to me, from the fact that He created what He did, the way He did was that once He created everything, He created it for man, and so He makes man, and He makes man so that man can enjoy the creation which God has made. And then after God made man, He rested. The sequence is significant. Because once He made man, and once He had made all the other things for man to enjoy, here's what He wanted. And I think this becomes very clear as we're going to look at tonight. What He wanted is to have fellowship with man. It was man who was made in God's image. And what God wanted was for man to have the relationship that he should have with God the way God wanted. God had placed Adam and Eve in a ready-made place. I want you to think about it. It was ready-made. It was there. He created it. And Genesis 2:15 tells us that God put man in the garden to tend it. Think about it. He was ready-made. He put him there. He said, I want you to tend it. And then verse 16 of Genesis 2 basically says, I want you to enjoy the benefit. And the reason that God made man and the reason that He made this world for man to enjoy is that He wanted man to tend it but not have to work extremely hard so that he could have fellowship and take the time and make time for man to have this fellowship and this relationship with God. And I want that, as you leave tonight, I want you to know that's really the thrust of what we're talking about tonight, to establish this relationship. But God had made man so that his daily existence was taken care of. And what he wanted was to spend time with man. And may I suggest just tonight, and we're going to look at this, I want to suggest something to you. That's exactly what he wants from us. He wants that from us. He wants a relationship with us that is different than any other part of creation. And He has done everything to provide that. And I want to suggest to you and me tonight that the issue is not what God has done. The issue is what we are doing about what God has done. Adam and Eve had other plans, obviously. Adam and Eve sinned, as you know. And part of the curse, listen to this from Genesis 3. Follow along if you have your Bibles. But listen to this beginning in verse 17. This is after the sin, after the curse. He said, then to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying you shall not eat of it, cursed is the ground for your sake, in toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life, both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field, in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread. I'm going to suggest to you tonight, folks, that when God created the garden, man didn't have to do that. Man didn't have to work that hard. The reason that work became burdensome and hard is because man sinned. But that's not what God had intended for it to be. God had intended for him to tend the garden so that the time spent could be spent with God in the garden. And you remember, when he sinned, God separated himself from Adam and Eve because of the sin. And what's interesting to me about this is that after Adam and Eve, there is no mention of this rest on the seventh day until the first half of the book of Exodus. Sin had destroyed this fellowship with God. And by the time you get to what Moses records in Genesis 6 in the days of Noah, it was so bad, God in essence had regretted that He had made man. I mean, sin was so great. Everybody was involved in it. But Noah and his family evidently. Sin had destroyed the fellowship with God. But after that, the next time we really hear about it is after leaving Egypt, we hear about the Sabbath again. I want you to turn to Exodus 16. We hear about this rest described as the Sabbath. It's after crossing the Red Sea. They're on their way to the Promised Land, and God provides manna for them. And when the manna comes, the Sabbath is discussed again. Look at Exodus 16. God had provided manna on Friday to last through Saturday, right? We've heard that all our lives. That's what happened. He provided on Friday. He said, it's not going to come on Saturday. And there's a reason why it's not going to come on Saturday. Verse 25 says, the day was called a Sabbath to the Lord, a rest day. Verse 26, Moses said, there will be manna on the Sabbath. And in verse 27, we see that some went to gather manna, and when they went together, there was no manna. Verse 29, the Lord said, I have given you the Sabbath. And verse 30 says, so the people rested on the Sabbath. Now, there's significance to this. And the significance that's seen here in Exodus 16 is the same significance that God was hoping Adam and Eve would see in the very creation. He wanted this kind of fellowship. God was blessing them with food here in Exodus 16, just like He had done in the garden. He blessed them. He said, I'm going to put you in the garden. All I want you to do is tend it and gain the benefit. And here they don't do anything for the manna. He rains down manna from heaven because He wants them to have fellowship with Him and have time for them. According to chapter 16 and verse 4, manna was given as a test. Look at verse 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. The manna was given as a test. The rest day was a test day. He wanted them to understand that's what He wanted. And by the time they had gotten to Mount Sinai, the Sabbath was commanded again. You remember it well, don't you? In the Ten Commandments, this is Exodus 20, beginning in verse 8. God would say this, remember the Sabbath day and do what? And keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. And in it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. Now listen to this. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that's in them and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Why in the Ten Commandments would God say this? Why would He go back and structure it and help them understand that this had to do with what happened in the creation? Because it is what happened in the creation. And He had not gotten it, and He said, I want it from you. And so He didn't get it from Adam and Eve, and so now He seeks to get it from a people who are going to be established, who are going to be His own people, His, in essence, His chosen physical possession. And by the time you get to Exodus 31, where the Sabbath law is indicated, Exodus 31, verse 12, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. And everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does not work on it, that person, or does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among you. This Sabbath law. And I think there's clear indication here that what God wanted was the Sabbath was to be a time of worship. It was to be a time when people would get close to God. And even in the book of Numbers, turn over to Numbers 28, if you will, and think about what happens here in Numbers 28. Even on the Sabbath, apparently there was more sacrifice than any other day of the week. The priest would work to have this Sabbath and to offer these sacrifices on the Sabbath. And in Numbers 28 and verse 25, notice what is said. And in this manner, and on the seventh day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work. On the Sabbath. The Sabbath was a day of special worship. And the Old Testament is filled with Sabbath language. In the book of Exodus, the Sabbath is always, typically always, tied to the creation story. What's the main point of that? What is it that God is wanting the Israelites to understand that Adam and Eve did not understand? God had made, let's think about this, God had made Adam and Eve a people for Himself. He made two people, Adam and Eve, and said, I want to be with you. I want to have fellowship with you. And the only thing that you need to do in order to maintain the fellowship is what? Don't eat of this one tree I'm telling you about. You don't eat that, and we maintain fellowship. We're all good to go. And what happened? Well, we know what happened. So God couldn't create in Adam and Eve a people for Himself, although that's what He wanted. And so we get to Exodus 16 and the subsequent chapters. God had made Israel, what? A people for Himself. That's spelled out all through this time. But no one wanted God like God wanted him to want them. Did that make any sense? Adam and Eve sure didn't. Israel obviously didn't. And I'm going to ask again, I'm going to state this again, and we're going to look at this further. But what God wants from us, folks, is to do what was never done in the Old Testament. Not the way He wanted. And if I can impress upon you what He wants from you and me tonight, it is He wants to have fellowship with us. He wants us to rest with Him so we can concentrate on having this kind of relationship with Him. Think about this. There was a Sabbath day. Every 7 days. Every 7 days was the Sabbath day. And every 7 years was the Sabbath year. And in the Sabbath year, there was no planting. Now, I want you to think about that. No planting in the seventh year. No planting for a group of people who totally depended on planting in order to survive. We don't understand the concept in our society, most of us anyway. You know, when I want something to eat, I don't go plant it and pick it. I go buy it. Or sometimes I may go to the farmer's market and get it where it's fairly fresh, but I didn't have anything to do with that. But in this kind of society, but to say, I don't want you to plant, that totally aggravated and disrupted anything that they would have thought. That's how they lived. And God would say to them, I'm going to grow your food. In the Sabbath year, there is no planting. I'm going to grow your food, and I'm going to grow your food so that you can spend the whole year with me. No plowing, no planting, and in essence, no work. Think about that. Why would that be? Because that's what God wanted. And then after every 49th year, after 7 Sabbath years, came, you know, in the 50th year, the year of Jubilee. And because it came only every 50 years, most people would experience it once in their life. One time. And the year of Jubilee was a year of release. Any debt that an Israelite had incurred, when the Jubilee year came, they were released from that debt. If you had become a slave because of the debt, then you, in that Jubilee year, you were released. You no longer were a slave. And also in that Jubilee year, there would be no planting and no sowing, which meant in that 49th Sabbath year, in that 49th year, that seventh Sabbath, there would be no planting. And then in the think about this, no planting in the 49th year, no planting in the 50th year because it was the year of Jubilee. And you could plant in the 51st year, but you couldn't plant and get crops. You only got crops in the 52nd year. So what did that mean? That meant during the time of Jubilee, you went 3 years. 3 years without doing what you typically would do in order to feed your family. What was God saying? He was saying, you have to depend on me. I want you. And he was saying in the Jubilee year exactly what he was saying to Adam and Eve. I am giving it to you. Now take advantage of it. And take advantage of it so that you can be with me. Listen to what God said about it. Take your Old Testament. Turn over to Leviticus 25. Listen to what God said about this particular year. This is Leviticus 25, beginning in verse 20. This is what they said. This makes perfect sense to me, but listen to it. Verse 20, and if you say, what shall we eat in the seventh year, since we shall not sow or gather in our produce, then I will command my blessing on you in the sixth year, and it will bring forth produce enough for 3 years. And you shall sow in the eighth year, and you shall eat all produce until the ninth year, until its produce comes in, you shall eat of the old harvest. Now, I don't know if you've ever just thought about it quite that way, but what God is saying is, I'm covering you. I'm covering you for 3 years. And the reason that God wanted that, it seems to me, was because He wanted the Jubilee year to be the best year of your life. And most people only got one Jubilee year. So it brings us back to a question. What does it mean to rest? What does God mean when He says that He rested? The first thing when we think of, when we think of rest, is inactivity, right? We come in from a hard day's work and what do? Well, I'll tell you what I do. Some men do this. Most women don't. I mean, women don't have time to rest. It's kind of like they don't have time to get sick. You know, they just kind of have to take care of everything. Right, women? But sometimes us men, we'll come in and I'll plop down on the couch. I'll get in that easy chair, and Beth will be in there cooking supper, which I get excited about. You can just look at me until I get excited about that. And I just stay there. Sometimes I stay there till late into the night. I hadn't moved. Now, I don't mean to sound that I'm just lazy. But I like that inactivity because I am tired. But even in Matthew 12, on the day of the Sabbath, the priests were not inactive on the Sabbath. Rest is not inactivity. And when God brought Israel into the land of Canaan, He said, listen to this, He said it was to rest. But I just want you to think about it. What does that mean? That doesn't mean I want you to go into the land and I just want you to sit there and do nothing, does it? That doesn't mean that. They had to draw water. They had to harvest and they had to sow, they had to cut wood, and they had to do other things which they had to do in order to survive. So to rest in the biblical sense did not mean to stop all activity. It meant to stop the activity that was burdensome. It's the difference in toiling and sweating from your brow. And tending. It's work that was not burdensome. God is helping your work produce all you need. He's not saying don't do anything, but He's saying you're not going to have to work that way. Not in the Sabbath year. There was a strong connection in the Old Testament. I think this is interesting. There was that strong connection in the Old Testament between the Sabbath rest and the land of promise. The word for rest in Hebrew was often used as a synonym for the land that Israel lived in, the land of rest, or the promised land. The promised land was a place where they no longer had the slave labor of Egypt. Look at that contrast. What happened in Egypt? Well, they worked. It was burdensome work. They made bricks, and initially they weren't having to gather the straw. You remember that. And then Pharaoh said, listen, in essence, you've got too much time on your hands, and what I'm going to suggest that you do is you not only form the bricks, but you're going to gather the straw. And it became more burdensome to them. Pharaoh had said, you get the straw for yourselves. And so what they were doing, they were working themselves to death. And when you do that, you're hardly living. They didn't have time to associate and to begin this relationship with God. And if in a very real sense in Egypt, they had forgotten that entirely, because when they came out of Egypt, they had to basically be introduced to God again. And God had told them, when you get to my land, when you get to this promised land, you're going to be working. That it won't be the oppressive, back-breaking work like you had in Egypt. As a matter of fact, remember what he called it? He said, it's going to be a land what? It's going to be flowing with milk and honey. I like milk and I like honey. And when I think of those things, they're pleasant to me. It's not going to be, God's saying, it's not going to be burdensome like you've come out of. You're not going to be inactive, but it's not going to be near what it was for you. They worked while enjoying the blessing of fellowship with God. Think about this passage. Don't necessarily turn it, but listen to this passage. This is Exodus 31:16. Listen to what God wanted. Therefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. You know what perpetual means? You know what covenant means? God said, I am establishing the Sabbath with you as a perpetual covenant. Why is that? It's because that's what God wanted. That's what God wanted from people that He had designated as His special people. Just like Adam and Eve. Because the Sabbath was Israel participating in the very thing that God had made them for. Do you see where this is going? He made them to have that special relationship with Him. That's what He wanted. That's all He's ever wanted. And that's exactly why the Israelite who despised the Sabbath, you remember what we read earlier? The Israelite who had despised the Sabbath and used it for himself, what happened to him? He was put to death. Let me tell you something. If you're going to despise the Sabbath, then God's going to put you to death. How seriously do you think God wanted that relationship? He wanted it desperately. Breaking the Sabbath was a refusal to worship God. It was a refusal to do what God wanted them to do. And 2 Chronicles 36 even says that the word of the Lord said they had not enjoyed the Sabbaths. They had not benefited like He had intended for them to benefit. And therefore, what happened? Well, 2 Chronicles chronicles it for us. Because of that, they went into Babylonian captivity. The Sabbath was to have been the time for man not to be concerned about the physical things, but to be concerned about the spiritual things. You see that? No, I'm not going to have you go out and work. Don't even go out and gather it. Why? So you can concentrate on me, God said. And those who went out and did that, who violated the Sabbath, and who were unwilling to enjoy God in the relationship that He wanted, were put to death. And so what happens, folks, throughout the Old Testament story is the story of Israel continues to digress. The people of God continue to digress over and over and over again. It happened in Adam and Eve's time. It happened during the Exodus. And in Joshua's time, there have been some revision. They have sought to do better. And then what happened in the period of the judges? The cycle continued, and they just went from bad to worse. And so, you know that Israel's history. They said, we need a king. And God said, no, you don't. And they said, yes, you do. And God said, well, I'll give you a king. And they gave him good old Saul. He looked like a king, but didn't act like a king. At least he didn't act like a king that God wanted. They got Saul, but God never did, or Saul never did as God wanted. And so there was further digression. And then he thought, well, maybe I give to David. David was a man after my own heart, God would say. But yet when David wanted to build what God wanted, he said, no, your hands are full of blood. I'm not going to allow you to build it. But I am going to allow your son, Solomon, because he will be a man of rest. Shalomo. Solomon. A form of the Hebrew word for shalom. Peace. Rest. The peace king, Solomon, builds a temple, a house for God. And things begin to come back. And then Solomon fills Jerusalem himself with idols. And the fellowship does not happen. The rest does not happen. So in Saul and David and Solomon's time, the rest that was to have taken place like God wanted did not happen. So you think, oh, well, maybe you get to this good king that we know about, King Asa. And what started out pretty well went south again. He became unfaithful too. And by the time it's almost too late, Jeremiah the prophet comes and says, in Jeremiah 17, he said, you know why you're in trouble? Well, you know why they're in trouble, don't you? You're in trouble because you haven't kept the Sabbath. And so they go into captivity. And when they go into captivity, God raises up a prophet named Ezekiel. And in Ezekiel, the 20th chapter, there is a reason given here that has to do with the problem again with the Sabbath. This is Ezekiel 20, beginning in verse 12. Moreover, listen to what God said. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbath to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statutes. They despised my judgments, which, if a man does, he shall live by them. And they greatly defiled my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury on them in the wilderness to consume them. And the Old Testament closes with the people of God. Remember? It closes with the people of God coming out of captivity. And they're rebuilding the temple. And they get discouraged and they stop building the temple. And when they stop building the temple, they begin to do things that they shouldn't be doing, including breaking the Sabbath. So we're introduced and told about a man named Nehemiah who goes with the people and he helps them then to help begin building the wall. And he leads them to the building of that. And then because he's a cupbearer of the king, he goes back to Persia. And when he comes back to Jerusalem, he sees how they're doing. And he found them desecrating the Sabbath. And in Nehemiah 13 and verse 18, he says, you profane the Sabbath. You know what's interesting about all this to me? Throughout the whole story of the Old Testament, God is wanting them to have the rest with Him that He's wanted from the get-go. And they just never could make it happen. God could never get the rest with His people that He wanted. Never could get it. Now, having said all of that, I want you to take your Bible. I want you to turn to Hebrews, back to Hebrews 4. And we're just going to read a few verses here. Now, I want you to read with me Hebrews 4, and I want you to read with me thinking about what we just talked about. And now the Hebrew writer says, I want to talk to you about something. Ready? In verse 1. Therefore, since a promise remains of entering His rest. Let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it. Oh my. While we're not altogether sure who wrote this, whoever wrote it knew what had happened in the past. Can you imagine him writing, "Let us fear lest any of you seem to have come short of it"? Can you imagine him writing that thinking, "For lo, these many years, the Lord's been trying to have this rest, and people follow it like they should, and it still hadn't happened. And now I'm having to write this letter about people that don't get it either. They want to go back to something that requires things that they really don't want." Look at verse 2. "For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them. But the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it." Are you listening to this? He's saying they heard it, but it didn't profit them. Verse 3. "For we who have believed do enter that rest, as He has said, 'So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest.' Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world." You see that? From the foundation of the world. God was ready to rest with His people from the foundation of the world. And up to this point, it couldn't be done. Nobody wanted it. Verse 4, "For He has spoken in a certain way, in a certain place of the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all His works. And again in this place, they shall not enter my rest." He's just reiterating the fact that nobody wanted it. Look at verse 6 carefully. "Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience." Again, He designates a certain day, saying in David, "Today, after such a long time, as it has been said, 'Today, if you will hear my voice, do not harden your hearts.'" You see what God's doing? Through the Hebrew writer, He's begging the people who were about to forget what they had just done. He's begging them again to say, Are you not going to take advantage of what I'm giving you? Can't you just see I can just see the frustration in the writer's voice, and certainly in God throughout all the ages. Verse 8, "For if Joshua had given them rest, then he would not afterward have spoken of another day." Look at verse 9. "Therefore, there remains a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his." Look at verse 11, folks. Here you go. "Let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience." Now, let's bring it home. Do you know what God wants from you? He wants you to give Him everything that He deserves. He wants you to give Him everything that He has wanted from the day He created mankind. Do we see that? And what He says, what the Hebrew writer says is that, are you people going to neglect this too? Are you going to do what everybody from the past has done? And He's begging them, don't go back to that. And what He's asking every human being who lives now is to say, enter the rest. Enter the joy. Enter the relationship. Enter the peace. Enter the relationship that comes when you fully submit to Me and do what I say. That's what He's asking for. And so, folks, when we neglect the things that God asked us to do, in essence, we are saying, I don't want to rest either. And He's in essence saying, well, I'm just going to try to find those who do. And that's what He's saying, it seems to me. And so I want to encourage you tonight to find, listen carefully, I want to encourage you to find the rest that He really is looking for you to have. That rest is fellowship with Him in His way. By accomplishing what those under the old system never could accomplish. Think about the joy that that brings. Let me just ask you. When you're living your life to the fullest, when you're seeking on a daily basis to have fellowship with God by reading what He says to you, and by praying to Him as we talked about this morning, and by trying to live a faithful life, by trying to keep yourself pure, by trying to reach other people with the gospel, when you're trying to do the very thing that God asked you to do, what are you doing? You're resting in His peace. You're doing the very thing He wants you to do. And you see what it is that He's asked of you. And when you're not, how do you feel when you're not doing those things? I think you feel like Adam and Eve. I think you feel like those Israelites who went out and hunted for that manna on that Saturday and couldn't find it. I think you feel like those Israelites who during that Sabbath year were looking for it that whole year and couldn't find it, and God would strike them dead. Because we're not allowing ourselves to do what God has said is best for us. He wants fellowship with you and me. And if we'll see it, and if we'll accept what He's done for us, it will be the best life we could ever hope to have. Manifest in this life, and then eventually it will be manifest in a spiritual sense when we're with Him forever. That's what I want. And I hope that's what you want. Would you be a person tonight who would enter the Sabbath rest of God? I hope that you will, by professing your faith in Him and come and saying, I'm His forever, and it starts tonight. We can help you with that. Come as we stand and as we sing.